Hello and welcome to the B Team podcast. My name is John Macy. Tonight I am joined by Justin Ayotte.
He's right, some worms.
Josh Schubner.
Yo.
And Brendan Kraus.
Hello.
And we are here to review Dune Part 2. We could go through the cast list, I guess, starring Timothée Chalamet, Florence Pugh, Zendaya, Stellan Skarsgård, Austin Butler, Dave Bautista, Javier Bardem, Rebecca Ferguson, some other people who I'm probably forgetting because the cast is enormous.
You can't forget Christopher Walken.
Yeah, you can. We'll talk about that. So we did review part one back in 2021, which was a hybrid theatrical HBO Max release, which, you know, we can talk about how that probably hurt it to some degree, but at the time I don't think there was any other choice aside from just delaying it or whatever, which they clearly didn't want to do. This was a full theatrical release on March 1st of 2024. I actually went opening Friday, rather enjoyed it. We'll get into specifics, though. Just anybody wants to give their quick thoughts on the book or the new film thing in general.
Has anyone else read the book? Just curious.
I have.
I was going to say, as you know, I have not read this book. This book sounds like it's about 1,000 pages, so I will not go near it.
Yeah, I don't think you'd like the book, Justin.
I read it in high school, my senior year of high school. So I was 18, I'm now 46, so my memory of it is, you know, I remember the broad script. I'm probably going to try to, my goal is to read it again before. Assuming that Dune Messiah is made, my goal is to read it again before Dune Messiah, or maybe before the second one comes out on home video, and just watch both of them back to back and compare them.
I mean, Dune Messiah is definitely coming out.
Yeah, I think at this point they're going to do it. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody else has read the book other than Brendan. I'm assuming you have by that point.
Yeah, I've read all Frank Herbert's books, all six of them. I've read two others that his son wrote, but really bad, as everyone says.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, I think I've read one of those, maybe. I've read, and this is all back to high school, early college for me, but I read the Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, probably, I think maybe one
God
more.
God Emperor, number four.
Yeah, probably one more of the six at that point. I might have stopped at God Emperor, but I have very little memory of anything past the original book. So.
About the Loon in Dune.
I guess the easiest way we can talk about the plot of this one would be either say read the book, you weenies, or just, you know, it picks up basically right from where the first film left off. I don't think there's any significant amount of time passing there. And it's basically just Paul Atreides, played by Timothée Chalamet, is now with the Fremen folks, who are basically just, they live in the desert. And what are they actually like? They're just, what do they do as, like, I don't want to say income, but what is the economy of that society? Like, I was never really able to figure that out.
Absolutely. The movie doesn't really go into it, but, you know, in the books, they're trading amongst other Fremen. I mean, because there's, like, a ton of Fremen on Arrakis, and they're just, you know, they've got, like, they're basically their own sealed-off economy that, you know, they're dealing with each other and whatnot.
Okay, so yeah, I knew there were like multiple tribes, even though this movie really only gets into one, and they just sort of trade with each other all the time. Okay, So, when Paul reaches them, he starts to encourage them to go after the Harkonnens, who have taken over Arrakis from his family, which we saw in the first film, largely. And he basically leads them in a rebellion against the Harkonnen group. And while that's going on, his mother, Jessica, played by Rebecca Ferguson, who is one of the Bene Gesserit, like the, they're basically like nuns in this society. She's going around on Arrakis to all the other Fremen tribes, basically arguing that Paul is this messiah type, not to use one of the titles of the later books, but he's basically a messiah who's going to unite all of them into into this giant, you know, he's basically just going to make them put aside all their small differences and whatever, and they'll just all the Fremen tribes would unite under him, basically. And, you know, most of the
movie
is... I
feel like the story has been done before.
Yeah, it's pretty general in that sense. I mean, I don't really feel like, other than introducing some science fiction concepts, Herbert's not exactly treading new ground here. I mean, the idea of the worms and stuff, and, you know, some of the little tech things that he comes up with, and the whole spice thing, which, you know, and I'm sure there have been plenty of other stories like this that have used drugs like that. And, you know, it's, and you guys did, I think before part one, you guys went back and did the Lynch movie at some point, right?
Possibly.
I think so.
I don't remember. I feel like
I think it did it with Milos, because there were a few things that Milos hated that we've put on air. if I remember correctly. Yeah, so I mean, that's basically the broad strokes of it. And I guess we can just get into, you know, our individual thoughts on it and any questions or things that we were kind of noticed as positives or negatives in either direction. Justin, I am most curious what your thoughts on this film were, because I didn't even really think you were going to see this, just given your normal predilection for movies longer than a certain amount of time, which I'm pretty sure this falls into. So I was even kind of frankly surprised that you even went to this. So...
unfortunately, most movies are going towards that now, so... I'm stuck going to a lot of these like 3-4 hour movies, because every movie seems to be that long now. I did watch the first one on Max. So
yep.
I was familiar with the first one and what had happened. I wasn't planning on going to this one before you guys plotted it, just because I didn't think my schedule was gonna allow it. But then my buddy hit me up and was like, "Hey, do you wanna go see Dune?" I was like, "Yeah, can we make it the earliest possible, though? I don't want to be out until like midnight, because I need to wake up early in the morning." So
I feel like we went to 5 o'clock. I went at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, we went at 5 and got out at like 8:30. I didn't get back home until like almost like 9:30, 10. Yeah, it was, I liked it for the most part. I didn't think it was a masterpiece. I didn't think it was the greatest thing since, you know, 2,000 years ago, when a guy also carried a tribe of people through the desert saying to follow me. You know, so it's, you know, it was all right. You know, I liked the acting. I thought the writing was good. I just thought it was like a little long. I think it could have been cut a little bit, or could have been like, you know, restructured, so that way it wasn't like, I won't say boring, but like slow at points, which did kind of slow it down for me, and I did end up dozing off a little bit once, but only for a minute or two, and then I did have to go to the bathroom halfway through.
Oh my
glad I didn't hold it as much as I used to. But yeah, so it, overall, I think on Letterboxd, I gave it like a 3.5 out of 5. You know, I would say it's comparable to the first one for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's all kind of just one big giant 6-hour story or whatever, which is cool, but I also kind of wish Brolin showed up a little earlier, just because his appearance in it was a little random. So that kind of threw me off at the end. Yeah, but no, I'm just saying, like his appearance, it like at the place in the film, I was kind of like, okay, so Paul has like, you know, created like this new like life for him and these people or whatever, and he's trying to like, you know, be the Messiah for these people. Then all of a sudden, like his Obi-Wan shows back up. And it's like, I don't know, it's like a very weird thing, because then now he ditches like Zendaya and all the other people, you know, all the other sand people, and you know, goes for you know, Josh Brolin, and you know, hangs out with him all the time. And I'm like, I don't know, it's like a very weird vibe I got from like that point, like to the rest of the movie. I thought maybe if he came in a little earlier in the movie, you know, and integrated him a little better into the like group and the story and stuff, it would have made more sense. But it's a little weird that he just kind of like joins up with them and becomes like part of their army, and like half the people don't really like trust him. I mean, most of the people don't even trust, like, so they're gonna trust this other guy, and you know, the other people that were part of, you know, House Atreides and stuff like that. So yeah, I just thought that part was weird. Like I said, yeah, I thought it was a little slow. Other than that kind of stuff, it was all right.
To bring up an interesting counterpoint to that, and Brendan, you can check me on this. Like I said, I haven't read the book in forever, but I don't remember there being as much stuff between Paul and Gurney Halleck when he comes back, and the book has a lot more between him and Stilgar. Like, I expected there to be a lot of stuff between Chalamet and Javier Bardem, and his role is not that big. And when he like barely shows up, yeah, in the first movie, like, I was like, oh, he's gonna get a ton of shit in the second movie, and he really doesn't.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird too. That Javier Bardem was kind of like, he was in it, but like I thought he was gonna be in a lot more, and I thought there was gonna be a lot more scenes with like him and Paul and, you know, stuff like that. And like I thought there was gonna be like, I don't know, I guess it's a little different than what I thought it was going to be. It ended up just becoming basically a love story, which I'm like, okay. But I'm like, this is basically Attack of the Clones. And I'm like,
yeah,
the guy doesn't like sand, and he's trying to bang Zendaya. Like, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. But, I mean, it kind of is, yeah. So,
yeah,
you know. I mean, I get everybody. It's like it's a masterpiece, and like, don't get me wrong, I love Denny's films for the most part. I like pretty much most of them. You know, mm-hmm, the visuals were great, all that kind of stuff. I just thought that like maybe he was just stuck with the constraints of the book. Maybe they could have like, I don't know, edited it a little better so that way parts one and two kind of flowed a little better, or maybe they, you know, kind of spread it out differently, or maybe use different parts of the book or something. But I don't really know what the books are. I've never read the book, so this is basically what I'm going off of. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird how they like, basically this was supposed to be like the second part of that like two-part movie, and then like Dune Messiah is like the next movie. But like, you know, I don't know. It was kind of weird. Like, I kind of wish they kind of like, I don't know, made it a little more balanced. But this one kind of seemed a little quieter than the first one, which they kept making it seem like this one was supposed to be more action packed than the first one. And to me, it seemed like this one wasn't as action packed as the first one. You know what I mean? Like, I like the fight scenes and stuff, but like, I don't know. It was just kind of weird.
This one was so much more action.
You want to hit that again?
Had less action than the first.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
I only remember there being one action scene in the entire first movie.
Yeah, I'd be curious to like see a side by side comparison. I felt like this one.
No, wasn't it like a big giant? Yeah, like the whole like end of the movie of the first one was like that big giant like battle, right? Between the the Batista people and the Ice people.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's thing where the Harkonnens take over House Atreides, but before that there's like 2 hours 15 of setup with nothing, you know, there's no other action in the rest of that movie. I mean,
maybe it's just because that setup. Yeah, maybe that setup was just a little more like interesting to me then. Maybe that's what I was thinking of, but I don't know. Yeah. Maybe the action in this was just a little more spread out that I didn't realize how much action was in this one. But like, I mean, they blow up some of the little like paint things or whatever, like those big globe things. They blow a couple of those up. And then there's just a lot of like fighting scenes, which are good. But there's like, I don't know. I think what happened is they took like in the first one, it was all like concentrated in like a 30-minute scene or whatever. Where this one, it kind of seemed like they took that 30 minutes and spread it across the movie. So it just, I don't know, it just didn't seem, you know. I figured if it was going to be more action packed, it probably would have like pushed the story along. But for me, it just didn't.
Okay, I can see that argument. Right. Were there any particular performances you wanted to call out as being good, bad, indifferent, whatever? I have a couple, but I was going to let somebody else go before me.
Are we doing like the general thoughts still, or what?
If you have anything, sure. Yeah, oh, okay. I kind of lost track of that. So go ahead.
For me, I liked it. I would say I liked it about as much as the first. I would say, you know, which one would I rather watch? I'd rather watch this one. For me, it's, I think they're good movies, but I don't know. It's like one of those, if this had come out like when I was younger, I feel like I'd easily be among my favorite sci-fi movies ever. But like, it's not even that they changed really much from the book. It's just, the book just has so much more meat to it. And I wish more of that was present. And I do feel like the ending's a bit rushed, but. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it, and it's interesting to see the response to this movie, that's for sure. Like, on Letterboxd, it's like currently the 6th most highest rated movie ever. Everyone's like, oh, it's the best sequel since Empire Strikes Back, you know.
But it's not, and really,
I like all the memes. I like all the memes about it, I'll say that. It is interesting, because this is like a movie that's turned into a cultural event, which I always just find those like fascinating to watch, like play out, regardless of whether or not I even like the movie. But I mean, I see people making like the Star Wars, Lord of the Rings comparisons, and while I'd argue these two movies aren't as good as those other movies, I can definitely see how like for a lot of people this will be like the thing that like this is what made you get into movies, or like, you know. How many filmmakers say Star Wars inspired them? I can see this being that for filmmakers, you know, 20, 30 years from now.
Yeah, I can see all those points. I mean, I'm kind of with you where, like, I really enjoyed both movies. If for no other reason than it's a really competently, really well-made adaptation of a book that I really enjoy. But I don't get the... I don't get the masterpiece talk in the sense of like, okay, this is great. I do really enjoy them, but like, if I really had to do it on like the scale of like Villeneuve's movies, like I would watch Prisoners again before I'd sit through either of these, probably.
Yeah.
just because Prisoner is
probably my favorite movie.
Yeah, like that does Prisoner is the, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that one. I'd still personally I'd put Prisoners ahead of that. I don't know if I ever finished Sicario really.
But, Anime is my favorite. I mean,
yeah, these are very good, yeah. But I don't get all the masterpiece talk. You know.
And also, we've been till I would say 2020. We have been starving for a good blockbusters.
True.
Just starving. They actually noticeably bad, and I feel like we've just in the last like 2-3 years gotten ones that like really like reignited people's like love for it. Basically, you know, this Top Gun Maverick, the Batman, also shot by the same guy who shot the Dune movies, Dune and Avatar, really, like, for a lot of people were like, oh, wait a minute, blockbusters, like, aren't just, like these, you know, super generic, you know, corporate products. Like, they can actually, like, by directors who, like, have a vision. Because, I mean, all five of those movies that I just mentioned, whether you like them or hate them, like, you cannot deny there's, like, actual like filmmaking behind them and like, you know, like a vision compared to like, you know, something like, I don't know, The Flash or Indiana Jones 5, you know, which no vision at all.
I agree with every point you just said. I just want to point out the hypocrisy of the idea that you just mentioned Avatar as having a vision outside of corporate synergy. It has a fucking theme park.
I mean, Dune is like a friggin' like one of the biggest sci-fi franchises ever. Is that like, does that make the movie not a vision? I mean, I'd say no.
Like, no, not at all. I just, yeah. Josh, you've been quiet, so I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I mean, it's a lot like the first one. Like, I liked it, but I love the 80s one. Like, there's just so many changes I don't agree with, and I know it's closer to the book, and that's fine, but, you know, like, I love the camp of the 80s one. I like when they were the Harkonnens instead of the Harkonnens, and they were weird ginger people. I thought that Sting is better than Austin Butler, you know? I mean, yeah. I'd say Chalamet actually did better in this one than in part one. I think he can play like kind of menacing pretty good, which I was not expecting. I don't know why Zendaya was in this movie. Like,
we're going to talk about that.
Okay. I was going to say, like, in the original, you know, like Sean Young is barely in the movie and they like whirlwind through that whole romance, but she's a more memorable character and she's more likable.
Yeah,
I thought that Rebecca Ferguson did the heavy lifting. You know, Jessica is probably the most like interesting character in the whole story, and the direction they're going for with Anya Taylor-Joy as Alia is just kind of bizarre.
Yeah. I actually got confused and thought, because I had read somewhere that Anya Taylor-Joy had an uncredited role in it, and as I was watching it, I thought she was the Bene Gesserit that did that whole thing with Austin Butler. I was like, wait, that looks like her, but I'm not sure who it is. I think it was that French chick from the Bond movies, and not her.
Yeah, Leia.
Leia.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I loved her like small appearance in this. I must say, I was surprised that scene where she like seduces Butler is like actually in the book. I was very surprised that was actually in the movie. I must say, I figured there's no way they'd put that like in a modern movie. But
yeah,
I'll say he got rid of his accent for this movie. So kudos to him.
No, he did it though. Just, people have been pointing out there's a couple of times where that Elvis accent totally slips out in the movie. I was laughing in the theater. I was like,
really?
I was like, that's literally the Elvis. Oh yeah. a couple scenes. It's like once or twice. Like I swear, you can hear that Elvis accent. Was talking to some people about this after the movie. I was like, did anyone else hear the Elvis accent for like just one or two line deliveries in that? But otherwise, I thought Austin Butler was really good. I really liked his introduction scene.
Yeah, his introduction scene was good. The knife fight was great, but I hated the ending. Because, like, in the Lynch one, it's just so fucking brutal and violent, and it's the only time you see that ball do anything like that. And in this one, they did, like, the stupid-ass fake-out where you think, like, you know, the other guy got stabbed, but you obviously know he didn't.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know what's funny?
Oh, go ahead, Justin.
No, I was just gonna say, I saw a Letterboxd picture from, I think it was Robert Meyer Burnett. She shared it. It was my twink boyfriend whose journey becomes a genocidal dictator. And it's Dune Part 2, the new Hunger Games movie, and then Star Wars Revenge of the Sith.
That's funny. I was actually really impressed by Butler, just because, I mean, I saw the Elvis movie. I have friends who, if they listen to this, will shit on me for saying this, because we particularly have a specific friend who might listen to this who really likes Austin Butler a lot. He didn't do a lot for me in the Elvis movie, really. And this was where I saw, oh, this kid can actually act a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, I hated the Elvis movie, and I thought he was like fine in it, but yeah, I thought he was solid here. And Timothy Chalamet, I've always maintained is like I actually think he's like a pretty solid actor, but part one I was like, he was fine, but just not really memorable. In this one I thought, wow, he was actually really good, like pretty much the whole way through. In like kind of this descent into like accepting this like messianic role.
I was, after seeing part one, I thought he was good in part one with what the role requires at that point in the story, but I was very skeptical of, you know, I've seen a bunch of the, for lack of a better term, like the artsy fartsy stuff he's done over the last couple of years. And I like him as an actor, but I was also very skeptical of, can he pull off the stuff that Paul has to do in the second half of this movie? And so I spent the entire time watching it going like, okay, is he going to lose it somewhere? Are the wheels just going to come off the bus at some point? And he actually does a really good job with most everything they give him here. So
Wonka really helped him learn how to walk in the desert. You know what I mean? You know, doing all the dancing in Wonka really helped him with the whole dancing through the desert so he doesn't, you know, alarm the worm.
I saw Wonka like 2 days after watching that. So it was like my weekend of Chalamet last weekend, I guess. Good one there, Justin. Yeah. Wonka wasn't bad.
I don't know if any of you guys saw that that viral tweet that was, it was like the day before Dune 2 came out, and it was some person saying like, this weekend we finally figure out who's the better actor, and it was a picture of Chalamet next to Tom Holland, and everyone was like shitting on the dude, being like, bro, like Timothée Chalamet is such a better actor than Tom Holland, and it's like literally not even close. I don't know if anyone saw that. I just saw that tweet right now. Like Tom Holland, I would argue, is like kind of like a bad actor, and like Chalamet's actually like got talent.
Yeah, I would just say I don't think Holland's had that role yet that, you know,
they could have. I will say though that I think also, Chalamet like, and Zendaya have better chemistry on screen.
A star, because yeah, the, from a little I've seen of those Spider-Man movies, it seems right.
Yeah. And I think now, given what Justin just mentioned, I think I have to bring up the Zendaya of it all. She's awful.
Yeah.
Can she just disappear? Like, I don't know. From what I remember of the book, okay, Chani was not one of the warriors. She was like a priestess type, right? So that's a pretty significant change there. And then from what I remember of the book, she supported what he was supposed to be. Not like this whole thing about but his people wrote.
She's her own woman, John. It's 2024.
In the book, she's
still a warrior. I guess we just can't have
I mean, in the book, she's like still a fighter. You know, she knows how to fight. Every friend knows. But the big change is Denis Villeneuve talked about this. He wanted an audience cipher, basically, because it basically boils down to him.
I think we lost him.
Yeah, you're having some pretty bad audio problems.
I think we lost your mind.
People are too stupid to realize Paul's like in the front of our backs. We can't really see what they're doing. Like, nothing.
You want to start that again? Assuming your audio works.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, Chani, in the book, she's a fighter, like, because every feminist, but Denis Villeneuve and the screenwriter basically, they talked about this. They want an audience cipher because they think people are like too stupid to realize that, hey, you should not be cheering for Paul and the Fremen at the end of this movie. They're kind of the bad guys. And they wanted her to be like that for the audience, like her seeing, hey, wait a minute, these guys are going down like a really fucked up path. And that's by far the biggest change from the book. Because in the book, she's like on board all the way through.
That's fucking stupid. Like, I mean, it's a pretty
based on the reactions I'm reading to the movie, I would say not the worst call because so many people are like, man, I was rooting for the Fremen and Paul like all the way through. I sent that one tweet in like the Discord where the person was like, oh, this reminds me so much of current world events, you know, and freedom fighters. And I was just like, these people, I mean, the movie like ends with the Fremen about to launch like a global like jihad literally on the galaxy. Like they are not like they're not the good guys.
Right, but
I mean,
how
all
that
I could think about was Palestine while I was watching it, so
I mean, yeah, I did see that thing you posted about people going on and on about colonization and white savior shit and like I don't, you know, and maybe I'm a simple person for this, but like I don't go to my sci-fi movies for... I go to my sci-fi movies for escapism. Yes, I acknowledge that a lot of that stuff is in there if you want to look for it, but, like, I don't want to sit through this Dune movie and think about, like, yeah, she's commenting on, like, white oppression and shit. Like, it's not fucking Earth, you assholes. Like, get over it, you know? And like, yeah, I get you're supposed to take larger thematic points out of science fiction, whatever, and apply it to our own society. But I do that after. Like, I don't need it to be a fucking sledgehammer during a movie like this, telling me, yeah, think this way. Like, no, when you completely rewrite how this major character thinks, it's like, okay, sure. And I mean, I think where I have the conflict is like. She's not like the one scene I remember was when Javier Bardem was going on about the prophecy, about how everything he was doing was playing toward that prophecy, and she just gets up there and goes like, "Well, yeah, but his people wrote this prophecy to control us and stuff, which they did. It's not wrong, but I don't need her to say it, you know, like." There's other ways to get there. Like, what is Rebecca Ferguson doing the entire movie if you're just going to call that out and be like, well, this is bad, you know?
Because the problem, John, is that you can't let people just draw their own conclusions. You have to tell them what they're supposed to draw conclusions from because of what's happening in the movie. You can't just let people say, oh, wow, like they really just created this religion or this messiah idea just to control these people and to keep them down here in this part of the world that, like, you know, is unlivable and inhabitable or whatever. No, you need somebody in the movie to go, hey, that type of thing and thinking makes us stay controlled by those people. It's like, yeah, obviously that's the theme of the film. Like, you don't need to tell us in a dialogue that that's the theme of the film. Like, you know, that's the whole point of, like, watching a movie and, you know, absorbing it and, you know, getting some comprehension. But because most people nowadays lack comprehension skills, you need to be told what the movie's about in the movie in order to understand it.
Just read the fucking book, you wankers. Jesus Christ. So I mean, Zendaya really bothered me through pretty much this entire movie because I was just,
she's
like,
just every not memorable.
Bothers me in every movie.
Yeah, so far I've never liked anything I've seen her in, or I've never liked her in anything I've seen her in.
I can't think of anything I've seen her in besides Dune, but she's just, I don't even dislike her. She's just not memorable at all to me. Like,
yeah.
Like, just very generic.
Spider-Man.
I think aside from this, for me, it would be the three Spider-Man movies. I can't think of anything else I've even seen her in beyond those. But she's not good in any of it, really.
I never watched Euphoria or whatever.
Euphoria?
Euphoria, yeah.
I know you're bad
everybody
name.
Says that she's supposed to be like...
It's one word.
Whatever. And I love never you, watched man. It. And everybody talks about it.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Never seen.
She does nothing for me at all. Like, and I liked enough of the rest of the cast to, like, not, you know... her presence was not enough for me to, like, dislike the movie or anything, because everybody else is so great. Except I had one other problem, casting-wise, and it's not, you know, I don't think it's such that his performance wouldn't wreck the movie for me either, because it wasn't big enough, but I couldn't look at Walken and just not be taken out of it by the Walkenisms. Like, just the way he... I don't want to shit on him too bad. He is a good actor. I'm not trying to say he isn't, but just the way he delivers lines, it's so distracting that I was just like, whenever he started speaking, I was just like, your father hid this watch in his ass. And I was just like, okay, can we go on to somebody else now? Can we bring Oscar Isaac back? Can we do anything here? Like, just no.
Yeah,
I thought he was gonna try to kill Catwoman the whole time.
Yeah, to me, he was just kind of generic old emperor man the whole movie.
Yeah,
could have cast any old aging actor in that.
And it's not a huge role, so it's not like it doesn't really skew the movie one way or the other. But you know, whatever. It was so distracting and otherwise well acted movie that I was just like, oh my god, just no.
Yeah.
So what did everybody think about the weird random black and white scene?
It's actually not black and white. Well, yes, it's black and white, but their planet is supposed to, like it's not like That's like a literal scene of, like, that's how their planet looks, I realized.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about
that. That's why,
that
like, one. All their skin's so pale. I guess they've got I can't remember what they said, like a weird sun of some kind.
Yeah, okay, I didn't get that at all, because I'm used to them being gingers.
Yep, so that's what the Harkonnen planet looks like. Okay, yep. I get that. It's just, I wish they'd explain that more.
Oh, yeah, they're supposed to be like a albino.
Yeah, because during during that scene in the arena with Austin Butler, I was like, why is this suddenly a black and white movie? Like, what the hell? And I get they're supposed to be albinos and stuff, but I was just like, why is everything just washed out all of a sudden? Okay. That's a good explanation for that. I hadn't really thought of that. I also thought it was interesting the degree of stuff that this sets up for Messiah, in the sense of, if I remember correctly, Brendan, and you know, you tend to follow the behind the scenes stuff on these kind of movies more than I do, but I seem to recall that the first one was made without the idea that the second one would be greenlit. So to me, again, he's doing stuff here that, you know, is a hell of an, it's not necessary, because like this one ends in such a way that you could just stop it, and if they don't do Messiah, you're okay, because it's not half a story necessarily. But there's a lot of setups with like Florence Pugh and the Anya Taylor-Joy stuff is all set up for Messiah, and if you don't do Messiah, then like what was that all for?
I mean, they're definitely doing Messiah.
Oh no, I know, yeah. I know, but I'm saying like he's taking that bet again when he makes it that like, oh yeah, they're absolutely gonna do.
I mean, I would argue, and I was the one who even said it was a bet the first time. It paid off, so regardless of what this movie did, they were gonna make the third one no matter what.
Yeah. And I think this one, you know, Brendan, I still don't think this one's going to get to a billion, but it's definitely
going to end up.
I think it's definitely going to end up doing.
I'd been saying for the longest time 700 million, which I know.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like way above the projection.
I'm pretty sure you said a billion.
No.
Yeah, I could see
that. But like over the last few weeks, I was thinking more. I feel like this. I'm thinking it could reach a billion. I think it'll be a lot. It'll be a, you know, I'm thinking for sure 700 at this point. I think 8 and 9 will probably happen unless it has a massive drop off. A billion, you know. I mean, it opened, what, 1 million more than Oppenheimer, which fell, like, I think a few million short of it. So, I guess the second one probably tell.
It opened to 80 US.
Well, right now it's at about 200 million worldwide.
Okay, and we're heading into the second weekend as we speak. Okay.
And I'm thinking now you're going to have 250.
Yeah, but you're getting a few things that are coming out now.
Plus domestic. That's the new like hold prediction. 250 like to 300-ish plus just domestic, I think you can do.
What's coming out?
Yeah, you're heading into a time where, you know, you're gonna have Kung Fu Panda coming out, which is gonna make parents bring the kids to it, so they're not really gonna have time to go see Dune or something like that. Then you have Ghostbusters coming out. Then you have Planet of the Apes, I think, is coming out, right? Oh no, Godzilla. Godzilla's coming out. You know what I mean? So.
You're 2 weeks away.
Yeah, so you're going to be having more and more movies. Yeah, so you're going to have more and more movies coming out. I'm not doubting.
Kung Fu Panda. But Ghostbusters, I think, will do, like, off personally. But I was reading, apparently it's, like, younger people that are typically, like, keeping this one, like, really, like, seeing it over and over from what I've seen, like, the 35 and under crowd. So even with Kung Fu Panda, I still think.
Yeah.
I still think the movie can do like 50 to 60 million this second weekend. You know, not have a big drop.
I don't know. I think it does 500 to 600 max. I think that's where it ends.
I could see it capping out at maybe if it does really well internationally, I could see maybe absolute upside of like 750. But either way, I mean the first one was, and granted the first one only had the, you know, had the partial theater release and then the concurrent home drop. I mean, the first one capped out at 430. So, I mean, either way, you're probably going to come in ahead of that. Barring, you know, some drop off.
300 more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to just see we've had two massive sci-fi movies like actually make money, which is interesting to see. Because I feel like so many of them bomb these days.
I also, to go back to the acting a little bit too, and you know, obviously this her character has a much larger role in Messiah when they get to that, but like I was actually really impressed with Florence Pugh too, and I was just like, can she get more screen time than Zendaya is getting right now? Like,
I mean, she's usually great in everything.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they kind of spent time on the wrong people in this movie. Like her character was a lot more interesting than Zendaya's character. Like, you know, like I said, it would have been interesting to see like Josh Brolin in it a little more. Would have been nice to see Javier Bardem in it a little more. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like they were focusing on the wrong shit in this movie, and that's kind of what, like, you know, basically drew my attention away from it. You know what I mean? And so I it kind of seems like these people who are calling it a masterpiece may not be people who like have maybe seen a lot of movies or, you know, whatever, but you know, it definitely had room for improvement.
Yeah.
You know, and not just because of the runtime or whatever, because, you know, I've seen movies with the same runtime and thought they were great. So, you know, it's not the runtime, it's how you use the runtime is how it works out. And I just think it used the runtime poorly, it used the actors a little poorly. The actors were great in what they had, but I think they used them incorrectly. You know what I mean? And like you guys said, like Christopher Walken's character, like, you know, they made it seem like in the last one that the Emperor was like this, you know, big imposing figure that was controlling all of this stuff. And when you see Christopher Walken, it's like watching, like, you know, not to get political, but it's like watching like Biden or Trump on TV. And it's like, you know, one's talking about nonsense and the other one's walking off the stage the wrong way. Like, that's what the Emperor looked like to me. If you want to mirror reality, and, you know, these people talking about that, you know, Dune reminded them of Israel and Palestine or whatever, that's what the Emperor reminded me of. Like, you know, somebody who's too old to do what he's doing, you know.
Considering that we're recording this on State of the Union night, that's quite prescient. I actually just thought of a solution for this. I actually just thought of a solution for the walk-in problem, and it wouldn't have been that hard. Have him swap roles with Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah, I mean, I think Skarsgård would probably have done a better job in the Emperor role than Walken would have. But I mean, I don't know if that's what I think they're aiming for, like somebody who is like old and incompetent. But it's like, that's not how you set him up in the first movie, at least what I remembered. Like, they made it seem like the Emperor was like this, you know, very strong leader that, you know, was able to take down House Achilles,
I can't remember if the book actually says this or not, because it's been a long time, but unless the point of Walken was to show that Florence Pugh's character was actually the one calling the shots, I'm not sure why you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which even then, it didn't really even show that she, like, was calling. I mean, they said she was calling the shots, and at times it made it seem like that, but honestly, I didn't get that. I didn't really get that until the end. You know what I mean?
I'm going to look at that more on a rewatch. Like, is she actually like driving everything he does? Not that he does a ton in this, but okay. So is there, I guess we can talk about maybe like thoughts about Messiah, if they assuming, you know, that clearly it sounds like it's going to happen, although it sounds like Villeneuve wants to take a couple years off before doing it. Because I'm guessing he spent probably 4 or 5 years straight getting these two made. so why not?
Yeah.
And you probably want the characters to age up some, because I'm pretty sure some time passes there.
I can't believe it's been 3 years since the last one.
Yeah, true. This was supposed to come out in 23, though, so, you know, was scheduled for October of 23, I believe. But yeah, I'll be curious to see Messiah whenever they do that. And, you know, Brennan, you probably read it too.
Yeah, so Messiah, I like Dune Messiah more than Dune, like the book.
Yeah.
Has anyone, or, okay, I guess no one here's read besides you, John, a while ago.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how to say this without spoiling it. But I have, like, I mean, I'll be interested in the movie once it comes out, definitely. But man, I am so much more interested in how audiences will react to what happens in that movie, assuming it follows the same plot as the book, relatively speaking. Because holy shit, Dune Messiah is so different from Dune. It is crazy.
Well, I'm assuming based on what we saw in this movie that Dune Messiah is basically going to be like, you know, he's probably going to marry Walken's daughter, Florence Pugh. There's going to be like a love triangle thing between him and Zendaya, or Zendaya is going to lead like this like thing against him to revolt. There's going to be an issue between him and his mother. Huh?
I thought he married both of them. Wasn't the thing with Florence Pugh just political?
Well, yeah, the thing with Florence Pugh is political, but What's-Her-Face is like taking it like, you know, seriously, like, you know, that he's, even though he keeps saying that he loves her, he wants to marry this girl for like political reasons. But then she also isn't sold on the whole like him being a messiah thing. So I have a feeling that's going to be like her thing of like, you know, she's going to be like going against him in some way.
Yeah.
And then you have his mother going against him too. You know what I mean? Because, you know,
that's probably how they'll change it from the book. Because if I remember, and it's been years, but if I remember the book correctly, there was none. I don't believe there was a lot of conflict between them over the marriage to Irulan. It was purely a political thing. She knew what it was.
It's basically Irulan hates Paul because like he won't like have sex with her, and she hates Chani because like he's having sex with her. Like that's basically it. She's getting cucked by Zendaya. So basically we're going to see Florence Pugh get like cucked by Zendaya in the sequel.
Unless they do, because you can't, as I said earlier, you can't have passive women in these movies in 2024 or whatever year they're going to make Messiah in. You know, Justin's probably right. They will turn it into like a fucking love triangle thing, even though it was never that in the book, from what I remember.
Well, Irulan is like not a passive character at all. She has like a pretty integral role to like the key events of what happened in Dune Messiah. Like she is, oh boy, she is going to be scheming and dealing in this next movie. And it's one of those things where all these people that were like rooting for Paul and are like, oh my God, it was so cool to see him like fulfill his destiny. I mean, they are in for such a shock when this movie comes out. I mean, like, for reference, you know, everyone's favorite movie here, The Last Jedi, you know, the king of subverting expectations. When Dune Messiah came out in 1960, whatever, people fucking hated it. Like, because it is a absolute subversion of expectations. Granted, unlike The Last Jedi, I'd argue it's, like, well-written. And, you know, it wasn't until, like, couple of years later that people start to realize, oh, okay, I understand what Frank Herbert was doing. This is actually like kind of brilliant. But holy shit, like Dune Messiah just flips so many things on its head. And like, assuming, you know, it's also the last movie, I mean, it is not a happy ending, like at all with that book. And Lucas actually, you know, people talk about Dune's influence on the original Star Wars trilogy, which it definitely does. But Dune Messiah's influence on the prequel trilogy is so much stronger than Dune's on the original trilogy. In terms of, like, seeing this a main character fall to darkness and ultimately well, I won't say more without spoiling, but yeah.
Well, I'm basically seeing him become basically like Vader and like Rogue One and like Kenobi, like kind of like that kind of Vader, where like in Messiah, he's gonna like kind of grow to prominence, kind of grow into his power, and then probably in the one after that, kind of like see him start to kind of fall a little bit.
Well,
I'm assuming. I mean, that's kind of what it sees the trajectory of. You know?
Here's my last question, and I don't know how we want to approach this, but Villeneuve, I believe, has said he wants to stop after Messiah,
right? Yeah, you can stop after Messiah, like, story-wise.
There are obviously three more books, some of which I've read, some of which I haven't. It was all a long time ago anyway. If this continues to be a successful thing for Warner Brothers, could we see them attempting to do the rest of them without Villeneuve?
I could see, like, being a movie. I have no idea how you turn book 4, which is my favorite one. A lot of Dune fans, like, favorite book. A lot of people have 2 or 4 as their favorite. I have, like, no idea how you even try to adapt 4. For anyone that's read that, it is just a... Like, just even, like, the main character of that book is just so freaking weird. Love him, but weird. Leto the Second. 5 and 6 are just... kind of crazy, but like they're really good. But like the scene where like Austin Butler seduced, like, okay, they have got like also just some of the craziest sex scenes you'll ever read in a sci-fi novel in 5 and 6. So I would be curious to see how someone tries to tackle that live action. But yeah, 3 they could someone could easily do. It's not like a, you know, crazy story, but 4, 5, and 6, especially 4. I don't even know how you try to make those.
Now, was 3 Children of Dune?
Yes.
That's been done. I mean, the Sci-Fi Channel did it as a miniseries. McAvoy was in it as a miniseries.
I don't mind it at all.
Yeah. I remember liking that miniseries at the time, but I don't know how it would hold up compared to these movies. Yeah.
I mean, the VFX, I mean, a lot of the effects, you know, kind of dated, but the actual writing, I think, is, I mean, it's not, like, going to win Emmys, but I think it's pretty decent throughout.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I think we did our duty with this one. This was quite entertaining. So, yeah, as far as our next big... movie review thing, I think we're gonna I hesitate to call it the Wolverine trilogy because it's not, you know, they're not necessarily connected movies, but we want to get some of the ancillary X-Men stuff done before Deadpool and Wolverine, so we're gonna start with the 3 Wolverine movies with Hugh Jackman. We will do those as one show rather than try and split them out. Josh, you made the compelling argument that Origins is not worth a show by itself. I think also you have a point that probably the Wolverine is not worth that either. That Logan might be the only one that would be worth that. So we're just going to do it as one show.
Yeah.
As far as
well, other Logan stuff, is a Western.
Yeah, true. It is a Western.
Westerns and Star Wars, let's go.
Yeah. So I think we'll be getting into that next week. I have not forgotten, like, all the Trek stuff. We're just trying to figure out, like, Milosh's availability with his job and stuff. So we'll get back into that stuff at some point. I know that Discovery starts again in a couple weeks. Justin, I know you don't do those. generally, because you don't really watch that. But we'll figure out. I'd like to think we'll figure out a schedule once that comes back, or maybe in the next week or two. Too, I'm going to talk to him about availability for that. We haven't done anything in Boris in a month either, so I'd like to.
We still got 15 episodes of Star Trek to do before we really get to Discovery. Unless you want to do Discovery first and then go back to the other ones, but.
We could jump it since you don't really do those anyway. And if we were doing week to week on those for a while, I gotta see what the other two want to do. But we can figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have some other things that we talked about doing a while ago that we could just slot in whenever. Like, I know Miloš wants to do the town at some point. I recently rewatched the first Pirates of the Caribbean, so I mean, if we wanted to do that, we could.
Great movie.
What's that?
I said great movie.
Yeah, I was just bored one night and threw it on, and it actually holds up really well. I mean, they get progressively worse after the first one, but I really enjoyed watching the first one again.
We could do the Barbershop trilogy.
Yeah, you can do that if you want. all right. So I'll get this up at some point today or tomorrow. It is Thursday, March 7th as we record this, so hopefully I'll get this up within, 48 hours or so.
8:36 on the East Coast.
It is. State of the Union's probably going on right now, not that I care. I would normally watch Braveheart on State of the Union night.
I think it starts at 9, but I'm going to stick to other things because I hate watching those things now.
Oh, I haven't watched it in years.
Okay, but like, okay.
Yeah.
But guys, when are we going to do our review of the State of the Union pod, though? That's the real question.
You can do that if you want.
That's more of a you and Josh thing.
you could probably get Brent on to comment about how it's all bullshit.
I wonder if they have prop bets. Like things he's going to say. Or how many times he's gonna go to the wrong like microphone or something, or how many times the rebuttal person's gonna say build the wall, it'd be interesting.
There are prop bets on everything. I would almost guarantee there are prop bets on this.
You could probably find prop bets on the B-Team podcast somewhere, I bet. Shit.
Guess what?
I'm going to be...
Anybody who's listening and they put a prop bet on if you're going to get a certain reference into a Dune podcast, it's Wormin' time!
Oh, insider trading right here. Jeez.
Oh, God. That doesn't count though, because you worked it into the post pod when you were trying to force it in there. If you'd done it during the actual conversation, I'd give you points.
Well, joke's on you, Justin.
Also, I gotta get it,
and he's gonna cut what you just said out, so we win the money.
Well, I don't edit shit. That's getting in there.
You know what I thought was hilarious though, and I think also kind of ruined the movie a little bit, is how they were trying to ride the worms, and you use these big giant grappling hook things to ride the worms. I'm like, okay, I don't know, that's a little weird, but whatever.
That's how it was described in the book though, right?
Yeah. No, the movie finally answers how you get off the worm, because the books never address that.
Yeah, you fall to your death.
Yeah. We'll also have to talk about how we want to, and I know this is not movie related, but if we want to do any sort of WrestleMania coverage this year again. And I'm actually actively watching shit now, so we certainly could do that.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I would suggest we do it a couple days after, because it might take me... I'm probably not going to be able to watch all of it within 2 days, but...
Yeah.
We could certainly do that. Saturday night
I will say, not that this is a wrestling episode, but I was happy with Sting's retirement match. So, there's that.
Good. Yeah, I wasn't sure what you would think, because I know we had talked about, like, possible ways it would end and whatever, and I haven't watched it yet. I'm, like, 5 weeks behind on AEW stuff, but I'll get there. And I know what the result was. I'm not real precious about wrestling results. But I was curious whether you would be happy with that end. Sounds like you were.
Yeah, I think it was kind of shitty, though, that, like, WWE didn't really, like, let them use some of the WCW footage and didn't
If you read into what's gotten out about that, they never asked.
Yeah, I don't know. Because it seemed like on the show itself, because, not to spoil it, but I'm sure you've seen the entrance already. One of his sons comes out as Wolfpack Sting.
Yeah.
But they can't say Wolfpack until after the show goes off the air, and he was talking to the audience afterwards on YouTube, and he goes, "Well, we're off the air now, so I can say Wolfpack Sting." You know what I mean? And then he put up the too sweet. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was that they didn't ask him. I mean, if they didn't ask him, that would have been shitty too. You know what I mean? But
like, I read somewhere that Diamond Dallas Page and Luger were there, but they couldn't put them on camera because they have contracts with WWE right now.
Yeah, Luger, Sting took a picture with him like before the show. They did show a couple of guys in the front. I mean, I think Diamond Dallas usually does show up on AEW stuff, but I don't know. I mean, he was technically in like the press conference thing after show was that? The one at Perth. Elimination Chamber. Yeah. He was there and he was asking Cody questions or whatever, you know what I mean? But I don't know.
Yeah, be interesting. I think this year, I think we did stuff on last year's, and I just kind of watched it because it was there. Like this year, I actually kind of give a shit. I think they've done a pretty good job setting up. So, and I'm legitimately curious to see where a lot of the stuff goes, which I haven't been for anything WWE's done in years now. So it should be interesting as far as that goes. And we'll figure out some way to approach that when it gets a little closer anyway. All right.
I got some
fun show, boys.
Yeah.
Nice job.
That we